Hey everybody, good evening. My name is Mary and I am an alcoholic. And just want to start out by saying it's really nice to be up here with you fine folks. And Billy, thank you so much for inviting us. I brought a dear friend of mine, Tibby, with me tonight, and it was just a beautiful day to go for a long drive in from Richmond. So thank you so much. It is always an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's unusual to come from somebody like me, because my focus is usually me and what do I get and what do I get out of it. And that's not at all how I approach coming here today. That's a direct result of the different life that I have today because of this program. And my sobriety date is May 10 of 2005. I still can't believe I'm sober. I couldn't stay sober for 5 minutes before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had tried every which way in the world to stay sober or to try to drink like a normal person, and I could never pull that off from the very first time I drank when I was 15. I have a sponsor that I use. My sponsor is sponsored, and I have the privilege of being able to walk this path with women that I'm fortunate enough to get to sponsor today. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. I usually learn more from those ladies than they probably learn from me. Nothing that I'm going to say tonight is original except for my own experience. What you're going to hear me share are things that I've learned in this program. And the biggest thing I've learned is how to deal and how to live life and participate in my life, because I couldn't do that when I was drinking. And I spent a lot of time, a good 20 years, drinking and just full of chaos and everything else, and life was just going right past me, and I had all kinds of great plans, but I was always too drunk to ever pull any of them off. I have a home group. It's the Speaking of Steps group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Sunday nights at 6:30, which is tonight. I told those folks that had I remembered that it was our business meeting tonight, I would have asked Billy for a different Sunday, but he got me on a day where I wasn't looking at a calendar. And again, I'm grateful for that. We meet at Forest Hill Presbyterian Church. That's at 44th and Forest Hill in Richmond. We're a step meeting, and it is a closed meeting. We have a speaker that comes in and shares their experience, strength, and hope on whatever step it is that we're on for 10 or 15 minutes. And then what we do is go around the room and ask folks that have taken that step to share their experience, strength, and hope on that step. And it's just an awesome meeting. And I continue to learn something every single time I go. And we started that meeting about 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years ago in August. And just to get in there and learn what it is to be a part of a home group and show up and put my hand out to the newcomer like somebody did for me, it really is an amazing experience. One of the things that my sponsor really has instilled into me and is very much my experience when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was important for me to hear how people thought, how they felt, and how they drank. So that I could relate to what they were saying and be able to say that I felt that way and I thought that way and I drank that way. Because I was definitely one of those people that I thought since everything looked good on the outside, that I had the world fooled. And the reality of it is during the last at least 90 days of my drinking, I spent more time thinking about dying and being taken out of this world than I did about living, because I was to a place where I couldn't stop drinking no matter how badly I wanted to, and it wasn't an option for me. I understand what the big book talks about when it says lost the power of choice to drink or not, because what I was doing was waking up in the morning at 7 o'clock in the morning under the premise of working from home. And I would start drinking upon awakening. That really was my trigger. I hear people talk about triggers that make them drink. For me, it was waking up. That's all I needed. And that's really the reality of it. And I'd continue that throughout the day, and my boss would say I sounded funny on the phone, and I'd say, oh, it's the cold medicine I'm taking. And I had convinced myself that I was actually working from home, but usually by 5 o'clock that day I was pretty well passed out. I left for an hour or two at lunch to go to the pub that was down the street under the premise of eating some lunch, which I never ate lunch. I went in there and drank until felt like I needed to get back home. Then I'd stop at the drugstore on the way home, drunk as a dog, and get wine, those big bottles of wine, and I'd go back home and continue to drink for the rest of the day until I passed out. Then I'd probably wake up for a little while later and start drinking again, and that was what my life looked like. So I'll go back to my childhood. It was miserable. I can tell you that as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not blaming anyone for my alcoholism anymore. I don't know how I got it. Frankly, I don't really care how I got it. The reality of it is today I have a solution for it, and I was missing that solution my whole life, even well before I started drinking. I came from a broken home. My mother left when I was four. She left me with my dad, who she said was an alcoholic and drank quite a bit, and he did. I don't remember a whole lot of that because I was very young. I do remember that my mom found another man and came back to get my sister and I at some point when I was maybe 5 years old. And that really started a lot of years of misery for me. My stepfather, by the way, I had little nicknames for people when I got here, and they weren't very nice. My sponsor said to me one day, "Have you considered not calling those people names?" I mean, I had them for everybody that was on my resentment list, pretty much. In fact, I think when I did my first fourth step, I wrote all those nasty names down that I had for people. I used to call my stepfather my step monster, and I don't call him that anymore, and I stopped that a long time ago, and it really did help me to find a lighter heart and, you know, get that peace after I did my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor and then went on and continued through the rest of the steps. I trust this process very much because it is the only thing that's ever worked for me. And you're going to hear me talk a lot about that as I talk about, you know, the way I drank and the way I thought and felt. My stepfather was a very abusive man, physically, mentally, emotionally, verbally, you name it. He was really good at it. He drank quite a bit himself, and I knew coming home from school at the front door to where we lived, the apartment was open, that there wasn't anything good going on the inside of that door, that he was probably in there, he was probably drunk, he was probably abusing my mom, and it was going to turn on me as soon as I walked in the door, and it usually did. That sort of helped me. I was a very nervous child. I spent a lot of time laying on a bed because I wanted to help my mom. I took on a lot of responsibility at a very young age. I wanted to make things right. I wanted to make the situation where I didn't have to come home to this. And I took a lot of that stuff on. Well, if I just do this, then maybe it'll be okay and he won't be so mean. And that didn't happen. And I spent a lot of time trying to take care of my mom, which resulted in physical pain for me. I spent a lot of time with a stomach ache when I was a little girl. They used to take me to the doctor, and they would say, "Oh, it's her nerves at, you know, 6, 7 years old." And they'd tell me to lay on the bed and listen to my heartbeat, and sure enough, it would go away. And I found myself always wanting to be, that was my sort of, no matter what I did, it wasn't enough to make him not be mean. I think that did help set some of the precedents for how I felt moving on through my childhood, and then when I was a teenager, and then even in my adult life. But again, I don't blame him or my mom or anybody else for my alcoholism. I will tell you that it runs in my family. My grandfather died of alcoholism before I was born, and I lost an uncle to this disease 2 years ago who was one of my best friends in the world. And he just could not stop drinking. I actually carry around his white chip in my wallet. But he just could not get a hold of this thing like I was fortunate enough to this day to get a hold of it. So I spent a lot of time wanting to be the little kids next door. I wanted to wear what they wore. I wanted to play like they played. I wanted to be carefree. I never felt comfortable being me. I was very paranoid, even as a small child. I remember a time being in kindergarten where these men were in the hallway dressed in these suits, and this was before my mom came back, and I was convinced that those men were there to get me. And I was terrified the rest of the day. In fact, I was not a quiet kid in school. And the gym teacher used to give out these little clowns if you were quiet that day. And I was really quiet that day because, again, I thought, well, if I'm really quiet, nobody will notice me and they won't take me away. Where I thought they were going to take me, I have no idea. And I still have that little clown to this day. I got the clown that day. It was a little clown made out of pantyhose or something. So I'll start right into the very first time I drank. I was 15 years old. I can tell you everything about that experience. I can't even tell you. One of the things that I've looked for in my alcoholism to fix me were relationships, and I can't tell you what the date was that I first got married. I can't even tell you what year it was, but I can tell you because I was drunk. But I can tell you the day that I drank for the first time, it was a half a day on Wednesday. We had a half a day every Wednesday at the school that I went to. And I went to the corner store and I bought a half a pint of vodka at 15 years old. And I drank that half a pint of vodka straight. I was too dumb to know that it didn't taste very good and that I was going to be splashing toilet water on my face later on in the afternoon. I had dry heaves and I was sick as a dog. And I don't remember thinking I want to pursue this the rest of my life, and I don't remember thinking I don't ever want to do that again. But I can tell you every time I drank after that, one of the times that I drank after that was I drank a whole fifth of strawberry schnapps straight. And to this day, I'm not a big fan of strawberries. But that's the way I drank. That's the way I always drank. And I can tell you that, you know, I lived in Detroit, Michigan. The drinking age in Canada was 17. And we were able to just take a little short drive across the bridge and go over there to the bars. I've been caught at the Canadian border, dog drunk, with no identification to get me back into the United States. And fortunately enough, they did let me back in. And I have so many stories like that. But then it was fun. Drinking was fun, you know. We did have a lot of fun drinking when I was younger, even though I was drinking mass amounts of alcohol then and getting sick as a dog. I did pursue alcohol like that from just exactly like I did the first time I ever drank. I remember even being in high school at some point after that, having two fifths of vodka in my locker. And thank God we had a period where we went down to the gym, and I had taken those bottles down with me. We were down there drinking it, and they went through my locker at school. Because I'm sure somebody told on me. But again, I had a lot of near misses when I was younger, but not a whole lot of consequences. And I have been a blackout drinker from the time I started drinking. I had no idea what it meant to be a blackout drinker when I got here, that you're still up and moving and doing things that you don't remember doing, but that someone's always happy to tell you about the next day. And so by the time I was 5 years old, and I could, that's what I've gotten it narrowed down to, because I got to tell you, I'm missing a lot. You know, the stuff that happens to our brain when we consume alcohol, the way I was consuming it, is pretty serious stuff. By the time I was in my mid-20s, I was a daily blackout drinker. I usually stayed home and did that, and I found every unhealthy relationship that drank just like I did, abusive, crazy, insane, all sorts of stuff made sense to me when I put alcohol in my body. And I was, and I know this is not original, I was okay in my own skin. You know, I could look you in the eye, I couldn't the next day. But I could look you in the eye, and I was pretty, and I was outgoing, and I had confidence, and I was enough, frankly, you know. But then when that would wear off the next day, if it did, I was no longer enough, and that guilt and that remorse and that hot feeling that's knotted in your stomach that just burns, and then your face turns all red, and, you know, by then I was shaking. I had a lot of physical stuff from the alcohol and the skin crawling, and I assure you it was never anything that kept me from doing it. So I decided when I was probably 28 years old, I decided that I had a problem with alcohol. And why I decided that was because I was in a relationship with another gentleman that drank just like I did. In fact, I married him when I was drunk. That was the second marriage, by the way. I married in my early 20s and thought that that was going to be the security, that that was going to fix me, and it didn't. I ended up creating a lot of damage for that young man. And I stand ready today to make that right if God puts him in front of my path. However, the second marriage, I was giving alcohol to my stepson. I was falling on glass tables. I was drinking an inordinate amount of alcohol. I was, like I said, the day that we got married, I was already drinking when we actually said I do, and continued to drink after that. I was still one of those folks, I guess you call them a functioning alcoholic, as best we can function, because I had convinced myself, you know, all those delusions that we have, that I was very much a functioning alcoholic, that I got up and I went to work every day. And I'll tell you folks, I've never lost a job over alcohol, but I probably should have, because I have gone to work reeking like alcohol, still drunk the next day, those glassy-eyed, still can't see straight, you know, bright red beet red face, shaking like a leaf, and that did get to the point where I couldn't even get through the day without going and putting alcohol in my body, and I'd do that at work. I'd go to the restaurant across from my office, and I'd drink a big cup of wine in a coffee cup so nobody would know what I was drinking, or I would drink three quarters of a glass of Jack Daniels with a splash of Diet Coke in it, so if somebody would just think I was having a Coke with my meal or what have you. It got bad. I mean, I remember being at a Christmas party around that same time frame, and I couldn't find my way home. I was so drunk, I passed the exit. I called my husband and I asked for help, and he was drinking himself at home, so he couldn't come help me. And I made it home that night by the grace of God. I'd like to tell you that I never drank and drove, but I did all the time. I did that a lot. I've never had a DUI. And those things are all things that I used, that I hadn't lost a job, that I hadn't gotten a DUI. Those are things that I used to just confirm for me that I really didn't have a problem, that I wasn't like everybody else. But I kind of got on the hot seat with my husband, so I decided to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in Nashville, Tennessee, which is where I'm from. And I walked into that meeting, and at the time, it was 1998 or 1999, and it was a smoky room, and the people didn't look as fabulous as I thought I did. And it was very easy for me to go in there. I can't tell you what they said. I couldn't hear anything, but I can tell you that when I got home that night, I had a couple pamphlets, and the first thing my husband said when I walked in the door is, "Do you want a drink?" And that told me that it was okay to continue drinking the way that I drank, because I had someone else's permission. And I continued to do that. What I started doing then, in the year 2000, that was a really rough year. Not that the other ones hadn't been rough, but I had all this material stuff that said that I was okay. And I really saw when I did my fourth and fifth step that that material stuff really means a lot to me. And I can tell you standing up here today that that is no longer the case. That today I do have a reliance on God more than I do all the material things in my life, because that stuff could not ever get me or keep me sober. And so the year 2000, my grandmother, which was one of the only places in the world that I felt safe, she actually died. I got a divorce that year. I lost my job that year. We were bought by another company, and everything that happened in my life, no matter if it was good or bad, I could use as an excuse to drink alcohol. I used to tell people that I was afraid of flying, so that wherever I was going, I could show up drunk. And it usually was at the most inopportune times say, for instance, Christmas Eve, and I passed out in the middle of everybody before we even opened presents, and nobody could get me up. But that year was, you know, and of course it was all about me when my grandma died. I wasn't worried about my dad or my uncle. I was worried about me. And I showed up at my grandma's funeral in May of 2000, dog drunk. Again, it was all about me. I fell that night. I continued to drink. And gosh, I carried that guilt and remorse around for a very long time until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and worked the steps. So that year was the year that I had started. I'd actually started before then because I moved from Michigan back to Nashville to get away from a psychotic relationship that I found myself in that was really a stalking type deal. That was downright scary, but again, stuff made sense to me when I was drinking that absolutely does not make sense to me today. I got away from that, and in 2000 I started doing the geographical cures that I didn't know about either until I came to AA. And that was, you know what, if I move here, I'll be okay. I won't drink like that. If I get this job, I'll be okay. I won't drink like that. That's what's going to fix me. Well, that year, I actually moved from Nashville to Louisville, Kentucky. I immediately, the day I moved into the new place that I was living, I got drunk. Before the movers even moved anything out, I was drinking heavily. So clearly, my move and this job didn't fix me. I started going to work reeking of alcohol. I was actually managing people, if you can believe that, and this one particular gentleman used to come in reeking of alcohol, and I would have to talk to him about his smelling like alcohol when I'm sitting here myself reeking of alcohol. And there were times that I came to work the next day still drunk from drinking the night before. This is when some of the consequences really started for me. I think I'd had plenty of them falling and you know, busting my face. But this is when it really started. I was doing $3,000 worth of damage to a vehicle after a night out and not knowing whether or not I hit a person the next day. That was pretty scary. And I've heard folks say in the rooms in the big book says, fear will sober you for a little while. And that was the case. You know, I would be able to stay sober for a day or two, but then drinking always became a good idea to me again. And that today, I understand what step one is about. And looking back on my own experience and people that in this program that go back out and come back in and tell me about their experience, I understand that. And that, you know, coming in and lamps knocked over and, again, damage to a vehicle again from driving off of a concrete embankment. And after I did that, my car was stalling, but I was still trying to go to another bar, and I drove 20 miles in the wrong direction away from my house, drunk as a dog. How I didn't kill anybody, I have no idea. Actually, today, I probably believe there's a reason I'm standing in this room telling folks that there is hope here. Because I was absolutely hopeless when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was fresh out of ideas. And I'll tell you, I know now, for me, it worked best when I was completely out of ideas on how to stay sober on my own. I ended up moving again 2 years into my deal. It didn't take me any time to find people in Louisville that drank like me. I've crashed weddings when I've been drunk. I've done some really stupid stuff. I ended up moving to a place up north and taking a job, making more money. And I don't say that to brag. I say that because, again, I thought that stuff would fix me. And if you looked at everything on paper, there was no reason for me to drink the way I drank. But I held on to all that stuff from my past, all the relationships from my past. If you had the childhood I had, you'd drink like I did too. That's what my thought process was. So consequences were okay up there. I mean, not too much. I'd lock myself out of the house, dog drunk, can't get in, would have to call the maintenance guy to come and let me in. I think he kind of got used to that. I have a lot of crazy behavior. You know, I could never remember if the garage door was shut, so I'd drive home and see if it was shut and then drive back and just crazy stuff, which, you know, was one of my cures as well. I was convinced I had obsessive compulsive disorder and that there was a medication that was going to help me, which would probably help with my drinking as well. I can tell you that didn't work, and I might be a little, you know, I like things the way I like them, but I don't think I'm really obsessive compulsive either. But I can convince anybody of that, right? So I can get whatever medication I think is going to fix me. And I'll tell you all up front, drugs are not part of my story. Alcohol always did the trick for me until it stopped doing it. And so I ended up moving again down to Richmond, and this is where, and this was always with my little dog. I didn't bring a family. I think I stayed away from my family quite a bit. I'll tell you that I still to this day don't have a relationship with my mom or my stepdad. I'm okay with that, and they're okay with that. It is one of those situations. It is what it is. I spent a whole lot of time as a result of trusting in this process, praying for those folks, and I have found peace. I don't carry any resentments around for either one of them. I genuinely want a good life for them, and there's been some stuff that's happened over the last year that has made me question that, but I was able to get right back on the beam after processing everything that had gone on. I moved to Richmond on yet another project that I was working on, and I lived in a corporate apartment, and every day, this is when every day at lunch I started going over and drinking during the day. My days got shorter and shorter because I needed to get to the bar earlier and earlier. I was sending people emails when I was dog drunk and not remembering what I was saying the next day, and it was around my profession and what I do. And, you know, at some point, I went to a Christmas party and was so drunk, I was supposed to come back to Richmond, and they wouldn't let me on the airplane. I drank from the time I left Richmond. They flew me up to my company in Milwaukee, paid for a hotel, paid for the whole weekend, and when Sunday came around, I had drank, I shared half a liter of vodka with a friend, and they wouldn't let me on the plane. I decided that while the two people that were coming in behind me were taking too long coming through security, so drunk as I was, I decided it was a really good idea to get up on the little silver thing where they check your luggage and sit Indian style because I was tired of waiting for them. They let me get back to the gate. I fell over, and they came back with a wheelchair and said, "We can't let her on the plane. She's too drunk." So I went back to the bar. That was my solution for everything. We were talking on the way here. I bought my vehicle drunk. I was telling them to hurry up with the paperwork because I needed to get back to the bar. I bought my furniture in my house when I was drunk. I can't tell you that I'm disappointed with any of the choices that I made, but yeah. So so my pattern was, right, even to function, I've ruined a lot of things for a lot of people. You know, I'd set out this big day, we're going to go do something in Richmond we've never done before. I could never pull it off because I was always drunk. And the solution was go back to the bar. I've ruined a lot of things for a lot of people. I decided that next day that I needed to tell my boss I had a problem because I didn't make it back to Richmond when I was supposed to. And his solution was, well, you know, there's treatment. We can offer treatment and what have you. And it was, I went to an AA meeting that day. I called one of the girls that made it back to Richmond. That I was withdrawing from alcohol that Monday so badly that my legs were coming out from underneath me. And I was on a plane. I was sick as a dog. I was so sick and shaking all over, and I had DTs, and I was sitting on that plane. When I got off the plane, I said, "I need to go to a meeting," and the girl that picked me up at the airport thought I meant I had a meeting at work, and I said, "No, I need to go to an AA meeting," and we found an AA meeting that day, and I can't tell you that that was my last white chip that I picked up, because it wasn't. People were kind enough at this meeting, though, to help me down the stairs in this meeting because it was in a basement of a church over in Richmond. And I couldn't hear what they were saying. I don't know that I heard a lot of what anyone was saying in Alcoholics Anonymous when I first got here and was able to stay until today, because I was still just absolutely drenched in alcohol and alcoholism. But that day, I went to meetings for about 2 weeks, and I found myself walking down the candy aisle and getting candy, and I was eating tons of candy, and I decided, and my boss never asked me about it again. I will tell you one more experience that I had, though. I'd gone out on a Sunday, and I had to actually go to work, and this was the client that was I was managing this project, and I had to go to work like this. I had drank God knows how much Jack Daniels that day, and I actually was walking into my apartment, and I didn't even have any shoes on. I was carrying the heels that I was wearing, and I was so drunk that I just fell flat on my face on the concrete. I had a broken nose, concrete stains in my teeth. I had a blood clot right here in my face, and I've still got scars here and here where I fell that day, and I had blood all packed in my face, and the girl that I was with that day actually left me on that couch. How I woke up from that, I don't know. But I did, and my face was just completely trashed. I actually have a picture that I carry around in my big book because, oddly enough, I set the camera up and took pictures of myself that day. That still couldn't keep me sober because it wasn't very long after that fall I was drinking again. I got the concrete stains buffed out of my teeth. I still, if you look at me in the right light, have this red patch here where the blood clot was and the broken blood vessels in your face, and I like to think of that today as character, but it's also a good reminder for me. Not that the reminder will keep me sober, because clearly it didn't. It was a couple weeks after going to Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, I am doing this the same way I've been doing everything, which was just wide open. I'm addicted to this just like I was addicted to everything else, and I stopped going. And I started drinking again, and I had terrible stomach pains when I did start drinking again. I don't know what's going on there, but shortly after I came to AA and was able to start hearing what folks were saying and buy into this deal and start doing it, I did go to the doctor, and my liver was okay, and they were actually kind of shocked that it was. And my stomach and everything else was okay. So I'm healthy today. I'm glad to report that. But that experience didn't keep me sober. I continued to drink that way. I decided again that it was time to take a job working directly for this company that I had come to do this project with. This is when I start getting sober, and clearly God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I did take a job for a three-month time period working from home, and I did nothing but drink that entire 90 days. I locked myself in that house. I went to the pub. It was within a three-block radius. There were drugstores on both corners and a pub that was in that same parameter, and that's the only places that I went pretty much. And it was to get alcohol. And then I would come home, and I would stay at home, and I would drink like that, and I would completely isolate myself from other people. I didn't want to talk to anyone else on the phone. I had hallucinations that were absolutely horrific. I would wake up terrified. And I say wake up, there was no sleeping. I was waking up, sobering up all the time. I tried the Tylenol PM thing with my wine. That still didn't help me sleep. I'd pretty much given up on that. Kind of something that is totally out of my character. I stopped showering for like 8 days, stopped brushing my teeth. Again, couldn't even leave the house. It was just disgusting. I stopped letting my dog outside. He was going to the bathroom all over the carpet. It was complete chaos and unmanageability. But I can tell you, when I came to AA and got a sponsor and worked the steps, that first step, my sponsor actually had to point out to me where my life was unmanageable, because I had this list of all the reasons I thought my life was still manageable. I live in a house. I'm not homeless. I'm not the drunk under the bridge, because I had this perception of what you all look like, and I didn't look like that. I now get offended when people talk about the drunk under the bridge, because I am the drunk under the bridge, no matter what my outside circumstances were. I decided that the remedy for that was, I'm a people person, I need to not work from home. Which, again, this is where God takes over. I got a job where I had to get out and go to work every day. And I had this big book that a friend had bought me that first go-around at AA, that 2 weeks. And I started reading those April 1st of 2005. I was sitting on a couch. I wanted to kill myself. I think I was too scared to do it. I talked to my uncle on the phone that night that I lost 2 years ago to alcoholism, and I even scared him. One of the things I tried as a remedy, I tell y'all, I tried a lot of stuff to get sober or stop drinking. The obvious ones that the Big Book talks about, switching up what I was drinking, maybe stay away from the hard stuff, just drink the wine or whatever. The reality of it was, if it was liquid and it would get me where I needed to be, which was oblivion and not able to feel, that's what I wanted. I wouldn't have cared what it was. I called a lady that I had gone to see that specializes in addiction. She was a therapist, and I thought for sure that she was going to teach me how to drink like a normal person. That was my goal. I told her that. I said, I don't even want to get married again. I don't want a college degree. I just want to be able to drink like a normal person. And she kept telling me I needed to go to AA. And I'm grateful that she did that, because somewhere along the way, here's what I told her. I called her that April 1st when I had DTs so bad. My head was shaking. I couldn't even hold the bottle. I was throwing up in a wine glass and then drinking it out of the bottle. I'm not even kidding you. It was so disgusting and so pathetic. Friends used to always tell me, if you would just watch I'm Leaving Las Vegas, you'll stop drinking. This is how bad of a drunk I am. I watched Leaving Las Vegas, and all I wanted to do was get drunk. That's my experience. That movie made me want to drink. I wanted to get where he was. And so, sitting on that couch, I picked up the phone and called her, and I was supposed to meet her on Saturday. And I, of course, couldn't do that. I called her the next day because I couldn't show up anywhere where I was supposed to. And I said, Ann, here's the deal. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm convinced this time I'm not going to drink anymore. And I meant that with every morsel I had in my body. I had no idea that I wasn't going to be able to pull that off, just like all the other times. My own experience told me I couldn't do that on my own. But I had to be out of ideas. And I told her, I said, I'm going to read this big book, which I did. I read the stories. Couldn't tell you anything it said. But I read the stories, and that kept me sober for about 38 days. Then I went to work and decided that I needed to go out drinking with my new boss. I actually, that morning on the way to work, I said, screw it. It was a little more colorful than that. I said out loud in the mirror, I'm going to let alcohol kill me because I love to drink that much. And this is where, again, God was completely in charge, which I can look back now and tell you that he always has been. Except when I wouldn't let him, clearly bash in my face and all that other tragic stuff. But I did go out drinking with her. It was May 9th of 2005. As I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 10th of 2005. I went there specifically to have 2 drinks, and that was going to be it. And she looked at me during my first one, and she's like, wow, you're not drinking very much. That's all I needed to hear. And I drank about 6 or 7 double Jack and Diets, and I drove from the west end of Richmond to the south side where I live. I got out of my vehicle at the drugstore that was by my house, and I went in there. I wasn't even going in there to get alcohol. That was the weird thing. I was going to get my dog some treats and me some gum. And I got out. I got up to the counter and decided that I wanted to be part of the magazine rack, evidently. And I fell and bashed my face, broke my nose. You guys have heard me say this again already. Tore up my face up here. And I just looked at the little girl behind the counter. I know I scared her to death. And I said, do you have a paper towel? I was definitely a faller. I prided myself on not being a puker, but I was definitely a faller. And she gave me a paper towel, then came the ambulance, and then came the police. And the police told me that if I didn't get, well, they told me that they were going to take me to jail for public drunk. And I said, officer, my vehicle's way over there, parked straight as could be. I didn't drive here. A friend dropped me off. I'm lying through my teeth. But I convinced these men to take me home. And that wasn't the drunkest I've ever been, and it certainly wasn't the worst I've ever felt. But this new boss is trying to get me on the phone. And I was scared. That was what I was scared of her and losing my job. I wasn't scared of anything else. I was telling somebody I thought one of the policemen were cute. I get home. They did take me home. And the next day, I went to four AA meetings, and I picked up a white chip that day. And it was not my idea. I can tell you that with certainty. And I was going to meetings a lot. Again, I can't tell you what folks were saying, but I can tell you that I saw people telling their stories and laughing about it, and that I just was amazing to me. I walked into Jaywalkers, and I know I've seen several of you folks there, and there was a lady that looked really happy and lighthearted, and I didn't look like that, right? My face was bashed in when I walked in there, and a woman came up and she put her hand out to me. And I'm so grateful for that, because I felt like I wasn't alone, but I didn't know why. I didn't know what this fellowship was about. I didn't know what blackouts were. I didn't know this progressive stuff. And that was a meeting where they explained to the newcomers that come in exactly what all that stuff means. And people talk about it. And I, for the first several months, I probably didn't hear anything they said, but I kept coming back until I did. They said, get a sponsor. And I asked this lady to be my sponsor, the happy one. And she said, are you done? I didn't know what I was saying yes to, but I said I was. And she said, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said I was. I had no idea what I was signing up for. And she said, be at my house every Sunday morning at 8:30. She did that to test me, to see if I was willing, because Sunday morning 8:30 is a little early. But through that, I learned to show up when I was supposed to show up, and it was very structured, which is exactly what I needed, but I would have told you that I was just fine. I don't need a sponsor to help me run my life. And I think I felt that way for a long time, but I still was following direction. I think it's been the last couple years that I actually understand what a sponsor is for, and what a sponsor is not for. And I learned that as a result of helping other women myself. So I did show up at her house at 8:30 every Sunday morning, and she did start taking me through the steps. And I'll tell you, I completed steps 1 through 12 to the best of my ability. She was not the kind of person, isn't to this day, that will let you just sit down at a meeting when you get there. You need to be up greeting. You need to have a job in that home group. You need to participate. People need to see you show up at committed meetings to see that this deal works. And I started seeing the same folks, and I started thinking, well, maybe this does work. If these people cannot drink, you know, and then I picked up a 30-day chip. And, you know, I told you I stayed sober for 38 or 39 days, but I was feeling pretty damn good. And I heard people talk about this pink cloud. I think I might still be on it. You know, things definitely have come up in my sobriety. Worse things than I can tell you came up when I was drinking. You know, I found out in November, right around my birthday, that my sister that I had sort of lost touch with had been dead for 2 years, and my mom didn't tell me or my dad. And my dad is her father. And Dad had just thought that she had lost complete touch with the family and sort of had written us off. And we found out that that wasn't the case through God's circumstances. And that was really tough to walk through. I mean, I felt like somebody came around and just plucked me right off the beam. But what I've learned in this program is that we show up no matter what we think, feel, or believe. And I've done that since I've been sober, no matter what I thought, felt, or believed. And it's worked, and I don't want to mess around with something that works for me. But yeah, my sponsor pointed out where my life was unmanageable, that it wasn't normal to not shower for 8 days and not brush your teeth and not let your dog out. It wasn't normal that all I thought about, I couldn't figure out what people did if they didn't do what I did, and that was drink all the time. And so she taught me pretty quick, right? You go out after the meeting. You go out to eat. You fellowship with these people. I had no idea what that was. Go out for coffee. Get hooked in. You know, my My sponsor talks about being in the middle of the circle and the triangle. And that's where the solution is for me. You know, I participate in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings today that talk about the solution. I want to hear, you know, if people go back out, what was going on in your life? What were you not doing? What was your experience? You know, I need to hear that stuff. I've seen people die in the short time that I've been here. You know, on a Friday I was supposed to go shopping with a girl that was having a hard time staying sober, and I just knew that I was going to be able to say something or spend time with her, and she had just suddenly magically stopped drinking. It doesn't work that way. No matter how much I want somebody else to stay sober or get sober and stay sober, I don't have that kind of power. You know, it's just like it was for me. I had to realize that there was no human power that could relieve my alcoholism. And it took continuing to come to meetings. My experience with step two, came to believe, is exactly what I've heard folks talk about. You know, I just kept coming to meetings. And then I came to where I wasn't so drowned in alcohol. And then I came to believe. And, you know, that's one of the greatest gifts that I have since I've come into this program is I believe you. I believe when people go back out. I believe that it's not going to get any better out there, that I'm not going to pick up where I left off. It's going to be bad. You know, I'll be lucky if I make it back. And the following Saturday, the lady I was supposed to go shopping with, I went to her funeral. And that was really crazy. I've also, you know, one of the other things that my sponsor strongly encouraged me to do was do service work. And she started pretty quick taking me into meetings in prison. And I met a lady that had committed vehicular homicide in prison. And that lady was me. That could have been me over and over and over. And that was all these little gifts that I've been given. I believe it. I don't need to go out and try it just today. I don't. You know, I'm here. It's not likely that I'm going to drink when I get home tonight. You know, the steps are an amazing deal. I did do that thorough inventory to the best of my ability. I did do that fifth step, and my sponsor knows everything about me. I continue to stay in the steps today as a result of taking other women through the steps. And we do book studies in my sponsorship family. We do tradition studies. We do all sorts of stuff to, you know, and especially we want to be effective. We want to stick to that primary purpose stuff and help the alcoholic that's still suffering. And I can be very egotistical and very judgmental, and I have a blabber face. And when I'm in a meeting that they're not talking about something that I think is appropriate to be talking about in an AA meeting, what my sponsors taught me is I need to bring something to the table that is grounded in the solution. You know, that's my responsibility. And I try to remember that today versus sitting there making faces and going, you're not doing it right. Because I did get really caught up in that the first couple years that I was sober. And there's always some drama and always some gossip. That stuff's not acceptable to me today. It's just not. And I really am of the belief, you know, I was one of those people, I want to know what my character defects are and, you know, like I had any power over them. Today I know that I don't. Right? That's God's job. My sponsors told me those are God's steps. And I believe that. I can't say, I can tell you when something comes becomes unacceptable to me that's a character defect. One of my big ones is perfection. You know, I will do something until I'm absolutely in pain, miserable, and then I'll finally go, you know what, I'm really sick of this, and I get to the point where I'm okay and I'm willing to let that go because I am never going to be perfect. All I can do is try to set an example and be a good Alcoholics Anonymous participant. You know, that's all I am today. I'm not trying to be president here or anything like that. I spent my whole life in a rush trying to get somewhere and be somebody and prove to you that I was good enough. And I don't have to do that anymore. And again, I have worked all of the steps. I continue to work a 10th step, an 11th step, and 12th step on a daily basis. I go back to step two if something's really big, because I can't think myself sane, right? My experience tells you that. I can absolutely think myself sick. And I come from a sponsorship family where we don't say that we're sick, because I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, just like it talks about in the big book. I'm not hopeless like I told you I was when I got here. And again, I'm still in awe of the fact that I can go through life today. I can look myself in the mirror. I'm finally comfortable in my own skin, and that did not happen overnight. I can't just sit back and want to be sober. I got to do it. I cannot stand to hear someone say that, and I don't want to offend anybody. Oh, I want to be sober. That's great. I wanted to be sober, too, but until I started doing it, I couldn't be sober. And that's one of the things that I've been, it's been instilled in me. We work the steps. We work them directly out of the book. I have found neutrality. Other folks don't do it that way. If that works for you and you're sober and you've helped other alcoholics get sober, I say have at it. You know, and that's really what we do here. But today I am comfortable in my own skin. I've learned that it is not any, it's not my business what anybody else thinks of me. I spend a lot of time bound up, you know, and that's where the third step comes in for me is, God, please just relieve me of the bondage of self, because that's what gets me in trouble every time. You know, I made that decision in the third step to continue on with the rest of the steps, and this is not something that I can just do and be done with it. I don't ever graduate here. I have to continue to do these steps and to help other women. I genuinely believe that if I don't do that and I sit on my laurels like it talks about in the book, that drinking will become a good idea to me again, right? Because I'm not doing anything. I have no remedy. I have no solution for my powerlessness over alcohol, that I will drink again. And it says in the big book, to drink is to die. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I am so grateful for all of y'all being here. I'm grateful for this program. I couldn't have told you that when I walked in here. All I could think was, I'm never going to have fun again. I can never drink. I'll end with this. I actually just got engaged. One of the things that I've learned as part of this deal is how to participate in my life, how to be in a relationship with somebody without building up resentments and throwing my hands up. I've learned how to participate with my dad and my stepmom and my friends and my sponsor and my sponsees and the people that I'm, you know, that I have in my life at work. I try to be the same person in all aspects of my life. I'm not one person here, one person there. Consistency is a big deal for me today. But as a result, I met somebody that God picked out for me. That is also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've been together for almost 4 years. I have never been in a relationship that long in my whole life, consistently anyway. And we're just so happy. And again, it's the gifts of this program. I have a light heart and a light mind as a result of this program, these steps, and you people. And thank you again, Billy, so much for having me here and letting us come up and share your meeting with you. Thank you all.